Blog Talk Radio.
Thinking about that.
That was pretty interesting.
All right, folks, this is Ramble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
This is your favorite, the guy you all know, the guy you all almost like, the Tornado, Tony Pentecal.
We have a special guest coming on at 8:30 Eastern Time there. We got Edwin La Bomba Rodriguez, the guy I've been trying to get on for years, actually.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember the one time I thought we even had him on. You were like, no, we didn't. I didn't know.
From Worcester, Massachusetts. He's actually born in the Dominican Republic. He's got an interesting story. I met him a couple times at some of the Battle of the Badges stuff. And it's a tribute to Ellie Colombo. He was there. So he's a big Rocky Marciano fan, too, from what we've heard. So plenty to talk about when we get him on. We just did a UFC, too. Big UFC event, and that's where that little clip came from. The guy that we wanted to win, of course, Brian Stann, didn't do so well. He actually was one of the only guys to get stopped all night. He kind of did his best there, did what he could do, but Chael Sonnen hit him with an arm triangle, and that was it in the second round. That was like the co main event. And there was an interview with Chael after the fact with not just Joe Rogan, but the other reporter there, Ariel Helwani, that's pretty well known in MMA. And this seems to me like this guy's back on the testosterone or something.
Yeah.
Just out there. Crazy. Even Dana White called him a nut. Kenny Florian was the one of two Boston guys I've seen in person who fought on this 136 card. He lost to Jose Aldo in a unanimous decision. I thought it was a lot closer than what they scored it, but what can you do? He had sort of a different game plan than usual. He didn't really try to strike as much on the feet. When he did, he was doing well at it, though. But Jose is a slick little guy, you know. Won all five rounds, and you know that's a low weight for Kenny, first time at that weight. So I think everybody calling for his retirement is a little too hasty. But you know, he could have won that fight, I thought. So it is what it is. The other Boston guy dispatched his opponent in just 47 seconds. 47 just happens to be my lucky number. But Joe Lauzon beat Melvin Guillard by submission, rear naked choke, 47 seconds in the first round. Unbelievable. I thought it was going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight, but turned out to be the first submission win of the night. There was about six decisions in a row, all unanimous except for Anthony Pettis getting a split decision over Jeremy Stevens. But other than that, the main event really was the bread and butter of this show. Frankie Edgar versus Gray Maynard. Frankie Edgar just basically plays himself in the same movie, in the sequel. It was like the same exact script, except there was a knockout in the fourth round. Frankie Edgar won. But he was getting knocked around in the first round, just like the last fight. And Maynard had him pinned pretty much to a loss. You know, he was going down and just kept taking punches and coming forward. It was probably one of the better fights I've ever seen this guy in, Frankie. He's definitely for real. And don't try to knock him out. I guess you got to beat him some other way. He's got a head full of cement. He ain't going down. But,
let me ask your opinion on something, Rich. You know, you're obviously a bigger mixed martial arts and UFC fan than I am. You know, I was at a haunted house this weekend. Actually, the one friend that I went with is a...
lost in the corn. You know,
what?
You didn't get lost in the corn maze, did you?
I did not get lost in the corn maze. I read about people that got lost in the corn maze to call 911. I personally did not. But I'd probably still be there, though, hanging out, you know, just chilling. But I had a friend of mine that stayed home, didn't go. I mean, he was texting my one friend updates from the fight. You know, we were actually at McDonald's afterwards, and he's like, oh, my God, so-and-so just beat so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, okay. But what do you think about a card that has six straight decisions? I mean, now, were these fights really action-packed decisions, or were they, you know, just a lot of hugging, non-grappling, no real action? I remember one of the first, it wasn't even a UFC card, it was a mixed martial arts card. I don't remember the guy's names, and the only reason we watched it was because Kimbo was fighting on it. It was like on CBS, it was free. I'm going back about 5 years. And the one fight leading into it, this one guy, like, every time the guy would come near him, he would go flat on his back, and he would just, like, kick at him, like, kick him away. I'm like, and there was no action. It was one guy fighting like a crab, and the other guy trying to figure out how to attack the crab. And it was terrible. And I was like, well, that guy is flat on his back. I'm like, there's no way, I mean, he can get any points for this, you know. He fought the whole fight on his back. It was a split decision, and it just boggled my mind, which comes out and shows how little I know and how little qualified I am to cover a sport like that, and especially to ever, like, judge or give opinion on a sport like that. But now, going back to my original question here, 6 straight decisions. I mean, does this help or hurt the fan base? Because, like I said, if these were 6 dull matches with a lot of grappling, you know, not a lot of contact, not a lot of striking, I can't see them being exciting, and I can see that being more of a detriment. We just shelled out, you know, $50-$60, and, you know, you didn't get much in return.
I don't know. Some of them were pretty competitive. I didn't really watch the entire undercard, you know, because it starts on Facebook, and it goes to Spike, and then it goes to pay-per-view. So I watched pretty much the major ones. But I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan out there of MMA. I like to watch it, you know, but I don't date back to the original, you know. Fans, but I think it's just the matchmaking. You know, some of these guys are just almost carbon copies of each other because they use pretty much 3 primary disciplines. And nobody has really come up there and really shut things up in a few years. You know, it's evolving, but it's like you don't see crazy stuff from anybody. You know, once in a while, somebody comes up with something different, but it's pretty much all those 3 basic things: the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the wrestling, and then the striking, more than just boxing. But you know, the striking is obviously way more popular. People love seeing knockouts. Just like in any combat sport, you know, they want to see a fight finish. They don't want to hear about a judge's score. But with mixed martial arts, you know, you can hold a guy down for a 5-minute period sometimes.
You're right.
Get away with bitch slapping him around a little bit.
Well, I remember watching a card back in the early to mid 90s, and this is before mixed martial arts really became popular. And this is like, you know, you'd have like a pay-per-view like every 6 or so months. And, you know, you really, and it wasn't getting the fan base that it was. But I remember we rented one night and it was a tournament. It was tournament style. And in the finals ended up being Dan the Beast Severn and Royce Gracie. And Severn being a big, you know, physical Greco-Roman wrestler, and they remember they didn't have time. It was like 30 minutes, and basically for 15 minutes it was Severn on top of Gracie, just grappling him down, trying to throw these little punches. You know, it was almost like trying to hammer him, and Gracie just playing defense, laying on his back, playing defense for 15 minutes, and then finally. And the next thing you know, Severn taps out. Gracie got him in a chokehold. So it was like, you had 15 minutes of just 2 guys laying on the ground. And it was like, I was like, after about a minute and a half, I'm like, okay, well, what else is going to happen here? And then I remember another time, they had another one. Now, this one wasn't a tournament style. It was just they had the show, and they had like a tournament style during the show, but the main event was already set up to be Gracie versus Ken Shamrock. And basically it was the same thing. Shamrock got Gracie down early, and for the majority of the 30 minutes had Gracie on his back trying to get arm bars in, trying to get any type of submission move in, trying to pound on him a little bit, and Gracie just trying to counter and set up for a chokehold or an arm bar himself. And for 30 minutes it was just one guy laying on top of another guy, really. And then it went to overtime. It was a 5-minute overtime. And as soon as the bell rang for overtime, Shamrock nailed him with a good right hand and split Gracie open under the eye. And then, his eye swelled up and had this huge cut in it. But after he hit him with that one punch, he took him right down. And for the final 5 minutes of overtime, it was one guy laying on top of another guy. Now, I know they made things a little bit better with the rounds in it, because then you look at it like this. You have two guys fighting, and like I said, I've only watched a handful of pay-per-views, but one I remember from last year over my friend's house was, and I'm forgetting the guy's name. He was Shane Carwin, I think it was, when he fought Brock Lesnar. And Carwin was kicking his ass in the first round. He had Lesnar down. He was ground and pounding him. You know, he was kicking the crap out of him. And the whole, you know, issue was you're kicking it down. Like, oh, my God, Lesnar's got like 45 seconds to go to get out of this round. Can he survive? That was, to me, more exciting. Instead of 30 minutes and, you know, because once the guy was down for, you know, there, it's like majority, most of the time, eventually, he's either going to just try to hold on, or eventually the guy's going to break through and beat him. At least with the five-minute intervals, at least you're going to say, okay, can he get through this round? Can he survive this? Can, you know, he survive being choked out? Can he survive being pounded, you know, until they stop the fight? And then hang on to the next round, which is what happened. Lesnar came back and ended up, you know, winning the fight via stoppage. That's one thing I like about boxing. You watch a good boxing match, fighter A knocks down fighter B and stuns him pretty badly. You know, I'll give you a perfect example. Gotti Ward, the first fight. They're going at it pretty good, and about 40 seconds into the ninth round, Ward lands a body shot, and down Gotti goes, and he's hurt bad. Gets up at the count of nine, and it's like, oh, man, he's hurt, and Ward's attacking him. Ward's kicking the crap out of him. Can Gotti survive? Can he survive? Next thing you know, Gotti's fighting back, and now he's got Ward hurt. Can Ward survive? I don't know. And then next thing you know, Ward's kicking the crap out of Gotti again, and the round's ticking down. Jim Lampley's yelling to Frank Cappuccino, the referee, stop it, Frank, you've had enough. I mean, announcer's telling him to stop the fight. And then the corner's about to throw the towel in. He survives the round. He gets through it. Completely, amazingly high drama. That's why I think having rounds in there helps UFC and mixed martial arts out so much. Because other than that, you're going to get a 30-minute drone sometimes.
Well, you want a real fight? We'll give you a real fight. Tank Abbott is going to be back in action October 30th, they say, at the Dixie Cowgirls nightclub. And he's going to be fighting this guy named Scott Ferrazzo, and they're going to be going to No Holds Barred, UFC number one rules. I cannot believe you just talked for like more than a minute about mixed martial arts. I think we've passed a milestone on the show.
I did a good job, too.
Did you research for the show?
No, I mean, you made me. Throw me a fucking podcast.
Yeah. The thing about MMA that I don't necessarily like with the matchups and some of the stuff that they do, you know, it's, the rounds doesn't bother me, but the judging, I mean, how do you score a fight? That's the thing with, like, how are all these fights unanimous decisions? Like the Kenny Florian fight, I swore it could have been a draw. And you hardly ever see the decisions, like what judge scores what, like you do in boxing. And, you hardly ever figure out like where the judges are from and all that. It doesn't get talked about. So sometimes it's all about a takedown. Sometimes it's who controlled the round. It's so different, you know. And there's no standardized class that I've ever heard of you take to be a judge for MMA. And I don't know, none of the decisions were really controversial. There was actually one that made up for a controversial decision. Dan Phan beat Leonard Garcia in a fight that went to decision, but it was the right decision this time. Garcia wasn't quite as active as he was in the last fight, so that was a good one. But, yeah, I'd rather see, just like the crowd in attendance usually, would rather see the striking and the knockouts. But sometimes fights are good enough, you know, decisions, you'll live with it. I don't know, I'm more of a proponent of more MMA fights going five rounds rather than three. main events like they're talking about doing with some of these fights that aren't title fights. Who knows, maybe they're going to have an intercontinental title fight. Champion. It would be like boxing, they'll start splitting up the belts.
That's right. The diamond Mexican title, the Latino championship from a guy from Norway and a guy from Africa.
Anyway, we got some boxing coming up soon here. Big boxing.
Big one this weekend.
Is that the Bernard Hopkins fight this weekend?
It is. I didn't have a chance to write a full review on it. They were saying that the fight is not drawing a lot of pay-per-view interest. What they were hoping for was Hopkins' peak of popularity right now. You know, coming off, you know, the 46 years old, oldest man winning a title, you know, coming off that high to help sell this pay-per-view. The problem is this is a stylistic matchup that is almost guaranteed to not produce a good fight. Sometimes you have styles like that. Some styles mesh, Gotti Ward, Corrales Castillo, Frazier Ali. Some styles just mesh. Some styles just do not mesh. I'm trying to think of the one that was, it was a fight. It was so bad. I actually fell asleep in about the third round. This is a couple of years ago. It was on Showtime. I fell asleep in the third round after the judges, not the judges, they were repeatedly warning the fighters to start fighting. It was that bad. Two heavyweights that were, it was a southpaw and a conventional fighter, and they were just literally each had their lead hand out there. I remember who it was. It was Chris Bird, who was notoriously after that first loss to Ike Abeyabuchi. He became such a defensive fighter, unwilling to engage. He would just sit out there and just become a Borathon. And it was Chris Bird versus Darvell Williamson, who was called Touch of Sleep. And ironically, the name proved right that night because by the third round, I was sleeping. Which is not the way I think they wanted it to happen. But the fight was so bad. I remember the referee warning them, saying, like, hey, you guys got to start fighting a little bit. You know, this is atrocious. Some styles don't mesh. And I think that's what you're going to see with Hopkins and Dawson. Dawson is a little bit taller. He's a southpaw. Now, he's once again trained by our friend the Iceman. And that's who he's had his most success under. But you got a problem here where Dawson's gone through about four or five trainers now. So, and you had Emmanuel Stewart for a fight, and Stewart's a guy that is an aggressive, defensive-minded fighter. And he could not turn Dawson into an offensive-minded fighter. So you got one fighter there that's not really willing to engage, you know, too much. And he tends to get outworked sometimes. When he's on his game, I mean, he's a very good fighter. But there are times he gets lazy out there, and he gets very complacent. Then you have Hopkins, the old master. But Hopkins, I mean, the fights against Pascal were exciting because Pascal is the type of guy, he's straight ahead, he's easy, he's there to be hit. So you had a situation where Hopkins basically had a guy that he could tee off on. With Hopkins being a little bit older and just losing just a step or so, that opened him up for Pascal to be able to hit him. So you had opportunities there where Pascal landed some punches, scored two knockdowns in the first fight, and wobbled Hopkins in the second fight. But for the most part, he was wide open for a brilliant counterpuncher like Hopkins to tee off on all night. You're not going to get that with Chad Dawson. With Chad Dawson, you're going to get bad Chad Dawson. What you're going to see there is you're going to see very cautious attacks. Plus, being a southpaw is going to make it a little bit harder. I mean, I'm sure there'll be openings for Hopkins to land his straight right hand. But at the same time, Dawson's a better, much better defensive fighter than Pascal is. He's going to use his legs a little bit more. And you're going to see two guys, sad to say, play chess for 12 rounds. It will go 12 rounds. It's going to be hard to score. It'll most likely be a split decision. And, now it's funny because when Hopkins fought Jermaine Taylor back in 2005, in both their fights, first fight I thought Hopkins won on his late rally. Second fight I thought was a draw. I did not think Taylor did enough to win either fight. At that time, Taylor was the new HBO darling. He's the guy they wanted to do well. He was the guy they wanted to supplant Hopkins and, you know, be the new face on HBO. Right now, I don't think that's the case with Dawson. So you're not going to have a situation where Hopkins will lose because they want to get it out of there. He's popular right now, especially after what he did to Pascal. So you're not going to get a situation where they're trying to push Hopkins out the door. They probably want to keep him in the door for at least another fight or two. So we're looking at a close split decision, and it's going to be hard. I mean, one judge is going to have Hopkins razor thin. One judge is going to have Dawson razor thin. And that third judge right now, I don't know. I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know.
Well, I'm rooting for the guy who's trained by our boy Scully, that Chad, because...
I'm a Philadelphia guy, so you know what my allegiance was.
Gotta go for...
I need a winner in this town, come on.
No, I got James too, but... Scully's our guy.
Scully is our guy, but you know what? I'm like I said, I love talking.
And boxes with his fighters. I don't think Dawson's going to find a better trainer there. But
true.
Yeah, I understand there's tough alliances there. You got to stick with your hometown guys. No, they haven't been serving you very well lately.
After this past weekend, I've divorced every other sporting figure in the city. I don't know if you saw my thing on Facebook the other day, how I likened the Philadelphia teams after last weekend's Philly debacle, and then the Eagles blowing yet another winnable game. I said these Philly teams right now remind me of Rocky IV. Funny how you played a Rocky song tonight, by the way. They said it reminded me of Rocky IV. And the Philly teams, don't let me use this analogy to compare that they're winning, because right now they're not. The Philly teams right now remind me of Ivan Drago, okay? And they are pummeling the hell out of my heart being played by Apollo Creed, you know? And, you know, everything is just gut-wrenching. You know, you're just taking this awful pounding every time. And my head is standing in the corner like Rocky holding the towel, saying, man, I got to stop this. I got to throw this towel in. We're taking too much of a beating. And the heart's saying, no, we still got to fight left. We still got to keep fighting. And the head's saying, no, it's over. You know, you ain't got no nothing left. And all the time, you know, Drago's just, a.k.a. these Philly teams, are just still kicking the crap out of me. I'm thinking about throwing the towel in on these guys. I'm done, you know. I don't know if I want to go to spring training next year. I don't know if I want to go on any road trips. I was going to go to St. Louis. If I go there this year, your co-host will be in jail.
Well, who knows? We'll see. Maybe the Red Sox will hire Tony La Russa away from them, and they'll be a better team next year.
This is an asshole.
No. But, I guess we got hockey to think about.
Your team lost having fun. They were getting drunk during the games.
Yeah, that was never. It's never going to happen again for a team, a ragtag team like that, to win it. This year, though, there's a lot of surprises, a lot of late streaking teams. You know, it's Detroit and Texas. Never thought those two would be in there. And National League, I don't even really follow that much, but. The Brewers, I mean, come on. Haven't they always been a bad team?
Yeah, the Brewers have been playing the last few years.
Really?
Wow. Well, late for the Reds knocked them off and beat them out. But no, the Bruins, I remember going to a playoff game a couple of years ago. Game one of the divisional series with Phillies Brewers. And the Phillies ended up winning the World Series.
Well, we're going to get
that's when they drew your boy CeCe off the mound.
My boy? No, he's a Yankee.
Anyway,
we got to get our guest on here pretty shortly, but I wanted to talk about another Philly guy right before we do that. Have you heard about this dude, Dewey Bozella, who is on the undercard of the Hopkins fight?
Did you see him all that? Just got out of prison for being wrongly accused?
Yes, 26 years in prison this dude did.
That's dumb.
Wrongly accused, just found out his appeal was rejected. Might not be able to collect any money for getting jailed for 26 years for a crime he didn't commit. And he wants to have one boxing match, and he's going to have it under the on the undercard of Bernard Hopkins. I shit you not.
Yeah, I was reading about that. That's another thing, right? You know a guy like Hopkins is responsible for that, you know, being, an ex-felon himself. You know, he wants to give a chance, you know, for guys that, you know, has had a rough break in life. But you look at it like this. Imagine if you lived 75 years, which is about an average lifespan, you know, these days. A third of your life was incorrectly incarcerated.
Yeah.
How much does that suck?
Well, what sucks is that's not the only case. And there's probably a lot more like them out there. That's
of
the way the system works.
You know, there's more and more use of forensics these days.
Yeah, it was actually that those guys in the Innocence Project, they've been doing this kind of work for years and years and years. And one of the best legal dramas I ever saw was about this girl who actually helped get her brother free from the same situation, wrongfully accused of murder. And it took like 18 years, I think. But she used them too. She went through them. And they ended up helping out. But she had to do a lot of the work herself. And there's actually a judge in one of my cases in Massachusetts that when he was a lawyer, he helped out another person that was wrongfully convicted get out of jail, him and his father, when they had their law firm. And they worked together on the case, and they exonerated the guy. But he got $1 million. This guy deserves at least that much. We'll see. I don't know. I guess there's a couple more avenues of appeal for him.
I got my latest Ring magazine in front of me, and this is a good sign for boxing fans, especially fans of ESPN. They're talking about a great season of boxing on ESPN2. And they're talking about some of the great fights they had on there. They had a couple outstanding upsets. They had some great fights, in fact, including one in July with Hank Mundy on there. But what they're saying here, let me read this. The overall per-show budget was the same as it's been for years, but we were able to move some of that money around and increase the amount that goes to the fighters by about $8,000 to $10,000 per show, which is awesome. The extra money helped on two fronts. It gave us some better fights. It also helps keep fights together rather than seeing fighters pull out a couple weeks' notice to take other fights. The ratings numbers indicate 2011 was only success wasn't only of the critical variety. The overall household impressions were up 9% over 2010. Hispanic household ratings shot up 17%, and this is the big one. Ratings among the 18 to 34 demographic, which up until this summer I was still part of, those kids that are supposedly all flocking to MMA was up 19%.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah.
So boxing is not dead for all you bastards.
It's not dead, people.
To say it.
It's like Jason Voorhees, baby. It ain't never going to die.
Yeah, right?
You know, you might get thrown at the bottom of the lake. It might get tossed out in space.
And one last thing about this Mr. Bozella here. He's fighting a guy with a little bit of experience in boxing, but no wins. And Bozella was actually at a place called the Death House, once the scene of electrocutions. And he became Sing Sing's light heavyweight champion. So he is nothing to mess with. And he says he just wants to be one and done. So this is not a career move. Just in case you wanted to know. But we're going to get Edwin Rodriguez on here. Talk about his upcoming fight later this October with Will Rosinski. He was also undefeated, but I looked at his record, and I got to admit, he has definitely not fought anywhere near the caliber of people that Edwin's faced.
I'm not in front of my computer right now. What record is Edwin sporting these days?
19-0.
How many knockouts?
14.
Okay. I knew it was something in the mid to high teens. I wasn't sure. I'm going to be on my computer in a few minutes, so when we get him on, I can pull up and look at some. So I'm sure I recognize some of the names of guys he's fought. That's what happens in the Rain Man.
Well, yeah. If you know their fathers, maybe. James McGirt and Aaron Pryor.
Well, yeah. So he fought Pryor and McGirt, kid?
Both of them. Just beat him. Two out of his last three fights were against those guys.
Stop. I'm the decision.
James McGirt by knockout.
You know, I read about. I'm going to be on my computer in about 2 minutes.
Hello?
Edwin.
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Very good. How you doing, buddy?
Great. We're live on the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show here. We got Tony the Tornado Pennacal on the line with us, too, from down in Philly.
Yeah, what's up?
Nice. Hey, what's up, Tony?
Not too much, man. How you doing?
Very good.
Well, we're just going over your record here, and I was observing that you're fighting a guy, Will Rosinski, who's undefeated, but he doesn't have near the record that you have fighting some real tough guys here, especially two out of the last three. I've seen Chris Triatti fight in person from New England there. I actually met you at a couple events out there. I did all the PR for Battle of the Badges.
Oh, nice.
So, and... curious, you got a set up now with you're training with Danny O'Connor, who was a guest of ours like a year ago, at least. So what's that like, the new training situation?
It's very good. It's just me and Danny O'Connor here. We are roommate training under Ronnie Shield, who's a very, very talented trainer. He's one of the few teachers of this game that we have left. And I feel like under Ronnie, I have been improving a lot, and every fight you guys are going to see it for me.
Mm-hmm. And who would you say is your toughest opponent so far?
I have to say Aaron Pryor Jr. due to his 6'4 height and 83 reach advantage. I also suffered a shoulder injury during that fight, which made it a lot tougher. But, it was going to be a tough fight regardless if I had an injury or not due to his size and reach advantage.
Right. And what would you say was your best moment so far in the sport?
I would say getting a knockout over Kevin Angle. It was a very good fight. I was winning, the whole fight. But, it was just the way I ended with a good body shot.
Awesome. And what's it like training with Ronnie Shields?
Listen, Ronnie's great. He's a very good trainer. Like I said, he's one of the few teachers left in this sport. And I'm happy to be with him and learning new things every day. And it's going to be a very long relationship.
I just got back to my computer, so I'm taking a look at the record now. One of your opponents, actually, you knocked out about a year and a half ago, George Mensah. You knocked him out in Durant, Oklahoma.
I actually just covered him about 2 weeks ago. He beat a former gym mate of mine by decision. Tough as nails guy. I likened him to a poor man's Antonio Margarito because he had such a such an iron chin, and it looks like you blasted him out in one round. 47 seconds.
You know what I mean? It's funny you say that because I was looking up to that was my first TV fight in ESPN. I was extremely hard for that fight, and I really thought it was going to be my first 8-10 rounds, and it just happened to happen that I caught him with a very good body shot at the beginning. But mentally I was prepared to go 10 rounds because that guy had never been stopped before. Yeah. And like you said, he's tough as nails. He's coming forward. I knew that with a headshot, it was going to be very difficult for me to get him out of there. So I started working the body well since the beginning. And I just hit him right on the bottom.
That's actually a pretty good strategy. I know I've talked to a lot of guys, some of the young guys that I train now. And one of my theories when I fought back in the day, I, being a short, stocky, physical guy, I was a body puncher. I loved body punching. And I would tell people, I'm like, you know what? I'll check their chin. If their chin's hard, I bet their body ain't. And that's where I'm going to do my
punch. Right. I love working the body, going back to the head. I mean, a lot of people in boxing, especially the young fighters now, they don't really go to the body as much. They don't understand how much effect it actually does to a fighter.
Oh, body punching is great. When I first started out, I being as little experienced as I was, I was a guy, I wanted to get into boxing because I was getting in trouble on the streets, and I could knock pretty much anybody out on the streets. But when you're fighting guys that have some skills to them, you have to learn how to, first of all, get yourself in better condition to keep up with them, and then second of all, learn how to wear them down and out-condition them. And one of the things I learned was, they would have me do sessions in the gym, which was just body. All you did was body work. And I remember sitting there, and some of the more veteran guys cracked me with a couple shots, took a shot under the heart, took a shot, to the rib cage, to the liver. And you realize, shit, man, that hurts. And now it's like my body feels like my energy is just drained. My legs
are just trying to do the same thing.
And now just imagine you doing that to somebody else. And I'm like, well, shit. And you know what I love about body punching? And this is my philosophy, and I teach to everybody now. When I would get in there, I was the guy that, I wanted to make you know. I wanted you to remember who I was. And then body punches hurt for days, for weeks. And I
thought,
liver. Now, you knock a guy out cold with a headshot. You hit him on the chin, he goes down. He don't remember that. He's blacked out for a few minutes. You hit him with a body shot. He's on the canvas looking up at you fully conscious, and he's got to remember that you're the one that put him there.
And that's the greatest feeling in the whole wide world. When you just put somebody down with a good body shot, and they're knowing what's going on, but they just can't get up. That's just awesome.
It's an awesome feeling,
Yeah, I've had a broken rib from having that happen to me the last time I tried to smoke. So,
you know all about it then.
It was up at Goody's up there in Brockton. The kid ended up going on to win the Golden Gloves that year, so that's the only good thing I could say about performance. I finished the round, but, man, that hurt.
Hey, look at that. You still remember that.
I'll always remember that. But, show me I need to do some more sit-ups. Get some more muscle over there. But now I know you're a big Rocky Marciano fan, right? Growing up in that area, the Worcester, Brockton. I know you.
Yes, definitely. Rocky Marciano, Marvin Hagler. I mean, we had some good fighters that we definitely look up to.
And what did you like most about him, Rocky?
He was just a very tough guy. Kept coming forward. He did not you know, he'll go down, but he'll get back up, and you'll be in trouble. You know, he had a lot of character in that ring, and that's one of the things that stand out that I see of him as a fighter.
A lot of heart. Talking about Rocky Marciano, and I was even telling Rich this a few months ago, down in my basement, you know, it's not a traditional finished basement, but it's one that I kind of put together myself. It's a big basement. You know, I, you know, put water seal paint all over the walls. And in one area, I have, you know, a big TV to watch some fights. I have, you know, some sports memorabilia. You know, I'm a Philadelphia guy, so I got some Philly stuff, some Eagles stuff, you know. Got a bar down there, pool table, you know, some fun stuff. But in another area is where I have my gym. And I have my heavy bag there. I got a couple mirrors, area to skip rope, an area to work the punch mitts and all that. Not enough area for a ring, but I'm hoping to fit one in there. Just when they built the house, it didn't work that way. But I have a lot of fight memorabilia down there. And a few months ago when we had that hurricane, my basement started flooding. And I got the pump on, you know, but the flood kept coming up. It got up to about 5 inches before I got it to finally start receding. But I was getting worried because what I have hanging on the wall is my great uncle was at the original Marciano-Walcott fight in Philadelphia. And about 13 or 14 years ago, I was fighting in a tournament up in New York. And just by coincidence, it was being run by a personal friend of Rocky Marciano's, a guy by the name of Steve Acunta, up in University of New York area. And my uncle, the son of my great uncle, gave me the program at that fight card. I thought I was going to lose it in blood. There's me running through 5 inches of water, carrying fight pictures, because and then he also used to keep newspaper articles of Rocky. Some of the fights with Walcott and Ezra Charles that I had framed on these walls. There's me tearing stuff off the wall and carrying up the steps. Now, thankfully, I got one of the receipts, but I wasn't looking at it. The original Marciano Walcott program, I saw on eBay, that's worth $2,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, it's funny, when people come over, and, you know, I'm taking them through my gym and everything, and I'm showing them to my, they have some of my old fight photos down there from back in the day, and then I have all the fight posters and just framed pictures and autographs and stuff. Then I take them to the Marciano Walkout program. I'm like, yeah, man, Philadelphia, September 23rd, 1952. And then I'm like, well, that's really cool. I'm like, well, where'd you get that? I'm like, where'd I get it? I was there. I'm only 35 years old. And they're like, and they look at me. Most people don't want to call me a liar.
Yeah.
And then they look at me. And I said, I age well. They're like, yeah. But the one thing I remember growing up, and I always tell the story, Rich is like, are you going to tell that stupid story again? Yes, Rich, I am. My great uncle was at the fight, and my grandfather both died within a few months of each other when I was about 7 years old. And I remember when I was about six, it was right after Rocky III had come out. I don't know no better, and I would watch some fights on TV with my dad. I remember, like, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, growing up watching those guys, Roberto Duran. This is even before Tyson came around. And, you know, at my uncle's house, we were having a big pasta dinner because we're all Italians. And my one uncle sat me down and goes, you know what, today I'm going to teach you about the great Rocky Marciano. And I said, oh, Rocky. I said, yeah, he just knocked out Mr. Terrence Clever Lang. Yeah, he's the best. He beat Apollo and others. And a hand smacked him in the front of the hand. He goes, that's such a problem. You want too much of that movie bullshit, you know? He goes, this is a great Rocky Marciano. He was no actor. He was no movie bullshit. He was the best. Nobody could beat him. You put your hands up, he'd break your arms. He broke the guy's arms. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God. And they're like, and nobody could beat him. And I'm sitting there going, nobody could beat him. And I said, now, both these guys have been, you know, passed away for almost 30 years now. And somebody comes up to me and goes, can anybody beat Marciano? Hell no. So he was absolutely. Because one of these two men will come back down from heaven and smack me in the head if I said anything different.
Yeah, yeah.
what did you like the most about Marvin Hagler?
Marvin Hagler, he was he's one of the among greatest fighters in this era, in our era. He was just strong, tough, all balls, and just keep coming forward and try to destroy you. I love his mentality and the way he fought.
One of the things I got from Goody Petronelli, I interviewed him for the show a while back, was he was talking about how Marvin would run in his combat boots on the beach. That's how he kept in shape in his heyday.
And, he was an animal.
Yeah, he was crazy. Just worked like a madman. And some of the terrain, I actually ran the beaches down on Cape Cod. So, I don't know if it was the spot that he used to run, but, you know, just in running sneakers, that's bad enough. Never mind covering for like 12 miles at a time, I think he used to run down there, so.
Wow.
But, so what's it like growing up in the Worcester area there, and what got you into boxing in the first place?
I don't know how I came here. I came to Worcester in 1998 from a big Dominican baseball family. And when we came here, you know, baseball back in DR was all year-round sport. But over here, it was, you know, seasonal. So I needed a different sport. And one of my brother's friends talked me into going to the boxing gym. And I loved it. You know, still here going strong.
Awesome. And you had to turn pro early, right? There was a situation with your family and your kids, right?
You know, after I ended up losing the fight in the amateurs, I shouldn't have lost. My kids were in the hospital. I mentally wasn't there, and decided to turn pro shortly after and provide for my family.
Oh. And how's that... how's that been going, that whole situation? Has it been, you know, pretty intense to deal with? Are you able to afford all the costs and everything from fighting?
It's been tough, man. I mean, the first couple of years, extremely tough. First year, we were self-promoter, so this is me and my manager, you know, looking for fights. So it was a hard road. After my eighth fight, I signed with Louis Bella and everything started coming a little bit more smoothly. But, you know, the first year of my career was hell, man.
Yeah, I've definitely had looked up your stories on a few occasions, and I wrote a little bit about it for the last Battle of the Badges. So, you know, more power to you for getting through that and, you know, trying to do something for other people that are dealing with the same thing. As far as your upcoming fight here with Will Rosinski, what do you know about this guy?
I know Will very well. We were in the amateurs together. We both won national titles in 05. I won them at 165. He won them at 178. We were in the travel team together, so we saw a lot of each other. So we know each other very well. He's a very good fighter. He comes to fight. You know, he hasn't really fought anybody in the pros, but I wouldn't take him lightly because I know how good he is. And you know, I worked extremely hard for this camp, and I'm ready to you know, beat well and look good doing it.
Awesome. And as far as your style, do you have a favorite punch or anything?
I mean, I just like to fight. I just like to punch my opponent in the face and body.
I went to a fight down at Foxwoods one time for MMA, and I kept yelling out, "Hit him in the face!" had a few drinks beforehand, and that's it. I can't talk about it. And people were listening.
You're good at that.
I think you'll like this one. When I was at a fight, I go to as many fights as I can in the Philadelphia area. Maybe sometimes hit some at AC if I can. It was before the Blue Horizon in North Philadelphia shut down. It was Father's Day a couple years ago. My father goes to a lot of fights with me. He's the guy that really got me into boxing. And, you know, when I was a teenager, he was taking me to the gym, you know, every night. And at the gym that we were at, you know, it was an old rec center, and they were really trying to get the boxing program established. So my dad, yeah. he used some of his electrical background and, you know, how, like, to hang, like, because when you build poles to, you know, hang the wires and stuff, you know, you learned how to really rig up joists. So he rigged up some joists for the heavy bags. And because the heavy bags they had there were, like, falling down all the time. So he rigged up these joists. But back in 1995, Mike Tyson was fighting in Philadelphia, and he came in a week early, and he was hitting all the different rec centers when, like, they were closed. And he would bring in his own 200-pound bag. And it was like, I'm like, Dad, your joints held Tyson's back. And my dad's like, I know. And Tyson used to leave, like, jumplets and stuff for all the guys. So I got, like, when I went back in the gym, you know, I got to use Tyson's jumplets and stuff, which was pretty cool. And so then we go to the fight card a couple of years ago in North Philly at the Blue Horizon. And two friends of mine were actually fighting on the card. Kid, he's a lightweight. He fights a lot in the New England area, Hammer and Hank Lundy. Hank's my boy. I've known Hank for about five, six years. So Hank was fighting on the card, and there's another kid out of the Philadelphia area, Harry Joe Yorgi, was fighting on the card. He's a friend of mine. So I'm like, Dad, for Father's Day, I want to buy you front row seats. We're not doing the balcony. We're doing the front row. we get right up in the front. I get front row seats. And they had, like, a celebrity row right in front of us, and Tex Cobb was sitting there, so I'm talking to him. I go to my seat, and who is sitting in my seat but Michael Spinks?
I'm like,
Dad, how do we tell the former heavyweight champion of the world to get out of our seats? I'm like, Dad, like, look at me. Tell him you put a beating on him worse than Tyson did. And we didn't answer that. Actually, two seats down with better seats anyway, which were probably his. But we moved to the better seats right dead center of the ring. So the second fight of the night, two females are fighting, and they're going at it tooth and nail. I mean, these two girls are warring. And the one girl lands a right hand, and out comes the mouthpiece, lands directly in Sphinx's lap. That's what he gets for taking my heat.
Now, what would you say is your ultimate goal in the sport, Edwin?
Be a Hall of Famer. Obviously, you got to start winning a world championship, but that's my ultimate goal.
And do you have a fighter out there now that you watch a lot of, you try to pick up moves from, or do you have a few fighters that you really admire and you like in and outside the ring?
You always could learn something from anybody, you know what I mean? And over here there's a lot of good fighters, and I'm always, you know, watching how they train, how they eat, and just picking up things up, like all the artists have been doing it longer than me.
All right. And what do you love most about the sport itself, boxing?
Competition of it. I mean, I love competing. It's something that I'm very competitive about, and I just love getting in the ring and competing and showing, you know, that one-to-one competition of who's the best.
Right. Is there anybody out there that you really want to fight right now? Not looking past your next opponent, but if you could fight anybody right now, who would it be?
Will Rosinski. Right now.
All right. And tell us a little bit about that card. What's going on that night? Who else is fighting? And how did this all come about, getting this fight in the first place?
It's going to be a very good card. It's going to be televised in Showtime. Me and Will will be the main event. The co-feature is Gabriel Rosero, a 141 pounder. I'm not sure who he's taking on, but I believe he's fighting for an ABF title. Daniel Connor, O'Connor's going to also be in the car. Super middleweight, Howard Jr., he's going to be in the car as well. It's going to be a very good night. A lot of good fights, a lot of good fighters. And on the card, there's also going to be Luis Rosa from Connecticut and the Polish Prince from Boston. And it's going to be a great night. A lot of undefeated fighters putting their all on the line. And it's going to be a very good fight for the fans.
Yeah, I've seen that. Did the Kielczewski, the Polish Prince?
Yes, sir.
I see it. He had a couple of shows. He's an unbelievable fighter. And
I always
see him, you know, he's got his dad in his corner, and they both look alike, and his dad's got giant biceps.
and extremely loud. I've been with Ryan since the amateurs, and his dad is the loudest guy I've ever heard screaming for somebody. But I have a great good relationship going, so
would not want to
be a very good fighter with him.
I definitely would not want to get into an argument or anything.
Yeah, not at all.
Very cool. So is this your first big event being on TV?
No, this is my third show box. Third time being a show box. It's very exciting to be on TV. A lot of people are going to be watching, so there's a little bit more pressure. But, you know, I feel like I perform well under pressure, so I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. And is there anything that you do outside the sport that... you know, you could consider another hobby of yours or anything like that. What keeps you busy when you're not training?
You know, having twins, I have twins, family keeps me extremely busy. When I do have a little bit of free time, I like to play some chess online and also play some video games here and there.
Yeah. I used to teach kids chess, a program called Chess.
Yeah. You got to hit it out sometime.
I'm not very good myself.
You used to teach, but you weren't good.
I just taught the kindergarten kids just some of the principles of how to play, you know.
Oh, okay.
They're playing correctly. I used to play a lot in college, actually, up at, I went to Norwich University up in Vermont. And,
nice.
My best games down at the pub where they had the back-to-back chess games right next to the bar, of course. Yeah. I had a buddy from Norway who used to love chess, so that's probably the most I've ever played, but so it's thinking me,
yeah.
For sure. Keeps you sharp.
Keep that brain busy.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, is there anybody out there you want to give a shout-out to or say hello to before we...
I just want to thank all the fans. For their support, my family, my wife, for taking care of the kids while I'm going training and everything else. Thanks to everybody for following my career.
Awesome. Well, definitely think you're going to stay undefeated here, and looking forward to finding out how your career progresses. Definitely. I've been following you for a few years now, being from the same area. And, for a guy who just started back in 2008, you're on the right path for sure. And I think you've been...
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me, and looking forward to talking to you guys again after my big win.
Yeah, someday I'll be back in the New England area here pretty shortly, next couple months. So maybe I'll catch you next flight.
Nice.
We'll keep following you, and best of luck. I know you're not going to need it, but we'll always like to say that.
Thank you very much. Take care, guys.
Take a good night.
All right. Good night, Steve.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. So there you go. That's Edwin La Bomba Rodriguez. He's got sort of a test coming up, I guess. He's not looking past, so tells you he's respectful of his opponent there. One thing I definitely wanted to touch on here is that Hopkins card, too. So, pretty interesting setup there. We got not only the Bernard Hopkins-Chad Dawson fight as the main event. That's actually for the WBC light heavyweight title, if you didn't know. But there's also the WBC lightweight title on the line in the co-main event. Antonio DeMarco's 25-2, 18 knockouts, one draw fighting Jorge Linares, who's 31-1. With 20 knockouts.
I think DeMarco was one of the ones that had a stoppage loss. In fact, let me pull up the count. What was his name? The guy that the fighter that got himself in all that trouble ended up hanging and killing himself in prison. I'll tell you right now.
Now I'm going to have to tell the story of Joe Song, who was now being investigated for killing a cellmate in prison. And Joe Song was in, like, the first UFC or something, or one of the early UFCs. And he was also in the Austin Powers movie. He was...
He was a Korean wrestler, dude.
Yeah. Right. Instead of Odd Job, he was Random Task.
Yes.
And he just killed the cellmate, apparently. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Sorry. But he's been jailed for years, I guess, since he got busted. Like, years after the fact, he was involved in a rape of a woman. And he goes and gets busted for, like, a parole violation or whatever. And they had took his DNA for some reason. And it was a hit on this other case, so.
I heard about that. So, how'd he kill him? Yeah, he hit him with a shield? But yeah, looking at Box Truck, I just did take a look on it. Antonio DeMarco, his last loss back in 2010, was a stoppage loss to Edwin Valero, who was after that fight 27-0 with 27 knockouts. Right after that, went to prison and then committed suicide while in prison. It was his last fight. So we got that one. Also on the card is an interesting crossword fight between another young Philadelphian, Danny Swift Garcia, a former guest on our show.
There's two former guests on our show on this card, you know. See if you can guess.
Okay, let me see if I can find the other one. I never had Paul Malignaggi on the phone, so I know you interviewed him. I think you did.
I don't know.
Who's the other one?
I asked him a question once in a conference call, but.
I remember when I first heard of you, I thought you were doing a story on him, but... Oh, Danielle Livingston, Danielle All Skill.
Yes, All Skill Danielle, that's what I wanted to get.
Yeah.
Nickname.
But. Yeah, I can't believe I missed that. Let's see how he's doing these days. 5-0. 5-0. 5-0, 3 knockouts. His last fight was a draw. So he's 5-0-1, I missed that. Last fight was a 6-round draw. He has a win over Greg Hotshot Hackett, who I actually seen fighting Philadelphia a few times, fighting a guy, an undefeated fighter by the name of Curtis Colvin, 6-0 with 5 knockouts. That ought to be pretty tough for Oscar Daniel. And back to Danny Garcia, you know, he's rapidly taking steps up in his career. I mean, he's really, really flying up there, up the ranks. He is fighting another former world champion in Kendall Holt. So let's take a look at this one. Danny Garcia is 21-0, 14 knockouts. His last fight was a pretty much a whitewashing of very faded Nate Campbell back in April. Before that, he had a second-round knockout over John Figueroa. He had a fourth-round stoppage, which was pretty impressive last year, over Mighty Mike Arnie Notice, knocked him down about four or five times.
So Danny's doing well. And then you got Kendall Holt here. Kendall Holt, still a lot of skills. He's got fast hands. Has a suspect chin. You know, out of his four losses, three of them were stoppages. He's 27-4, 15 knockouts. He won his last two fights by stoppage. He had a third-round stoppage over Julio Diaz, who was still very relevant at the time. Had a one-round knockout over Lennon Arroyo. But he also had two stoppage losses, or two losses, I should say, before that. He was stopped after six rounds by Kaiser Mabuza. In the fight he was favored to win, that was in February of 2010. He got stopped, retired after this. And before that, he had a close decision loss to Timothy Bradley. He has a split decision win over Demetrius Hopkins. He had a pair of fights with Ricardo Torres, lost the first fight by 11th round stoppage. He came back and got himself off the canvas twice to stop Torres in one round. That was back in 08. I remember that fight. Torres dropped him like the first punch of the fight and had him all but down and out, and then he came back and won. He also has one other stoppage on there, a one-round knockout to Thomas Davis back in 2004. So, Danny's punching power and youth should be able to carry the day here.
All right. And this is like top to bottom good card, too. There's a bunch of other fights on here that are good. Luis Collazo is coming back for another fight. Still going, like the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah, I remember when you, played 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. I remember fights Shane Mosley, Ricky Hatton, which a lot of people thought he beat Ricky Hatton. He's fighting Freddie Hernandez. We got Paulie Malignaggi. He's another one that will be around for a long time. Still not knocking anybody yet. hopefully he comes in the ring with a shaved head.
Paulie not on the Jersey Shore, Malignaggi.
Yeah, doesn't he look like somebody that should be on that show?
Oh, they should make a guest appearance. They should make a cameo.
Sure.
I think they fit his style.
29-4. He's got six knockouts. So you figure, basically less than 20% of his wins are stoppage wins.
And they should send him.
These
kids will never be able to.
And I'm fighting. Actually, this is a pretty interesting form. Orlando Lores, 28-1, one draw, 19 knockouts, but his only defeat was a stoppage defeat to David Estrada. This is Lores, the guy that might be want to build him up here. I don't know if throwing the towel on Malignaggi yet. But for a guy that, bases his career on, speed, timing, not having punching power, you got a little bit of a problem there when your reflexes start to go and you get a little bit older. Guys like Foreman could fight forever because he was so big, he was so strong, and he hit so hard. Foreman now could probably come out and knock out half the heavyweights.
I don't know about that. Probably got a little bit of arthritis. And,
he's still knocked about.
remember what Duva said. We asked him who the best fighter out there was. Christy Martin.
Yeah.
She's still fighting.
I think she broke her hand in a fight. She was winning, and she broke her hand.
She broke bad, and then she filed a complaint against the commission for stopping the fight.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, your hand's like the size of your leg all of a sudden. Come on, you can't fight like that. What can you do? Anyway, we have a few other fights worth talking about too. But so you really think Hopkins is going to have no trouble in this fight decision?
No, I didn't say that. Remember I said I couldn't tell you who the third judge was going to pick? I said it was going to be a split decision?
Oh.
Yeah, I said that a little bit ago.
Final answer is no.
The styles do not mesh. You know, you're not going to get two guys that are going to, you know, be. You get two fighters, like, you know, their styles mesh, and you know, like, even if they don't stand in front of each other, but and no more boxing, it's still more exciting. I'm just trying to think of some good examples. Well, a good one here was the first fight between Buddy McGirt and Pernell Whitaker. You know, it was a boxing match. It was like a chess match, but it was exciting because McGirt pressed the action. Whitaker countered. They each had their moments. Whitaker ended up winning a very close fight. You know, Julio Cesar Chavez and Meldrick Taylor. You know, they worked out well because Taylor used his faster hands to fight inside, and Chavez was a harder puncher, the heavier puncher. They meshed very well. You're going to get two fighters right now. You get Hopkins, who's still a counterpuncher. Hopkins that likes to, you know, take time off in the, during the rounds, forces opponents to press the action. Hopkins does better with aggressive fighters. Look at his fights, ponderous aggressive fighters, maybe a little bit slower on their feet, maybe a little bit more wide open. Look at his fights with Kelly Pavlik, Antonio Tarver, Felix Trinidad, guys, Robert Allen, Segundo Mercado, a lot of fights out there. Where these guys kind of tried to bring the fight to Hopkins, and he just tore him apart. John Pascal, you know, and he just picked him apart. He used their aggressiveness and maybe like their wide open style against them. The guys that have made Hopkins, they've troubled him, if not beaten him, Jermaine Taylor. I don't think Taylor won those fights, but they were still close, ugly fights, not a lot of action, and they were fights hard to score because Taylor used his reach, fought from the outside, used his angles, used his legs, did not engage Hopkins. Roy Jones, both fights, even the fight last year that Hopkins won, wasn't tremendously exciting because Jones wanted to stay away from him. Their first fight, not tremendously exciting. Jones tried to stay away from him. The fight with Winky Wright, not tremendously exciting because Winky tried to play defense. Guys that try to play defense with Hopkins, stay on the outside, even if Hopkins wins, the fights are hard to score and they're not tremendously exciting. And that's what makes it, and that makes it hard on two accounts. First of all, if it's not tremendously exciting, you know, you don't have a set guy that you could say, yeah, he definitively won that round. Hopkins doesn't get hit flush very often, especially by a defensive fighter. When he fought Winky Wright a couple years ago, me and Yano had a pretty big disagreement. Yano's like, Wright got ripped off. I'm like, no, he didn't. Wright might have won two or three of the first six rounds. And then from there on, Hopkins, you know, decimated him. No, I don't think so. And I'm like, go back and watch it again, you know? But a defensive fighter, they're not really going to hit Hopkins clean, but in turn, they're not going to get hit clean. Hard to score. That's why I think this fight's going to come down. It's going to get 12 rounds, and three judges are going to be split on it. I can't tell you who's going to win.
All right, that's straight from the ring man in boxing. You heard it first here. It's a toss-up. I think Bad Chad is going to come in there and jab his way to victory. And I don't know. We'll see what John Scully's done with his jab, because it's changed over the years. When he started, when I really liked him, he had like the kind of style where it was mostly defense. He was just putting that jab out there in your face all night long. And I haven't really, you know, followed him too much since he had his little hiccups here and there. So we'll see. We'll see if he's worth his weight in gold, that John Scully there. But funny story about Scully, not quite so funny. But he sent me an email this morning about Golden Boy. Golden Boy there, Oscar De La Hoya, apparently made a little joke that wasn't so funny. When Gary Shaw started complaining, there was a bunch of guys speaking Spanish, and he said we should have a Spanish to English translator. So then Oscar gets up on the mic and says in Spanish that Gary Shaw said that, you know, we got a little too many people speaking Spanish over here. We need to, you know, cut down on the people speaking Spanish. So, you know, of course, all the Spanish-speaking people started looking at Gary funny all day. And they didn't like it, you know. But Oscar wasn't really telling the truth or doing the translation like he should.
Right. That ain't cool, you know. I mean, I know Ike, man. I told you enough too. I mean, he was pissed off at it. When he first sent me the email, he's like, Golden Boy, not cool. I was like, he was even going to crack a joke, you know, something about, you know, the cross-dressing and the drug use and all that. But then I read it and I saw where he put it on Facebook. And I was going to put a comment, but then I didn't want to get like 500 emails every time somebody else commented on top of it. So
Good like that, isn't it?
Yeah, Facebook is like that.
Bastards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could shut that notification off, you know, but I do like to see if someone comments on something that I say. I think what I say is interesting.
Why else comment? Unless you want to build a conversation, right? The way that thing is these days, it's, I don't know, I can't understand how people, like, do all the other stuff there is to do on Facebook. Like the games and all that crap, I don't even touch that stuff.
I don't do that. People can be like, yeah, you want to play, you know, poker, you want to play this? I'm like, no, not really.
It's the wave of the future, though. Supposedly that's how the government's tracking every move we make, too, though. Got to watch out. You leave
they check my status and what I say. Do they follow me when I go to the pumpkin patch this weekend?
Don't be buying any nuclear weapons online.
Yeah, I'll try not to. Tempting, but I'll try not to.
But anyway. We had a couple crazy stories. And we obviously had the boxing one with the guy that was in jail for 26 years. We had the story, we talked about Joe Song, that crazy story. There's another crazy story about a guy who had just had one MMA fight, but he killed four people with his girlfriend on like a cross-country rampage. One of them was the father, his own father, because supposedly there was another family member who was molested, and the mother knew about it, so both of them got killed. Then they killed some random guy at like a music festival, a jazz festival somewhere. They killed him because they thought he was a Jew, and the guy had like a swastika tattooed somewhere. He had all kinds of tattoos. And then they killed some random person in California, and nobody even knew about that one until they told them. So I'm just like reading this, and I'm like, jeez, unbelievable story. But on a happier note, there's a castle over in the UK. They're going to have cage fights. And it's a place where they had one of the scenes from Harry Potter. So that was theirs. And what a story this woman has, too, who built this, like the gardens at this place. She's not even going to be there for this show, but they're having cage fights at her castle. She's a duchess. And her husband gave her like tens of millions of dollars to build this garden. And so she made this garden, and it was in the movie, and now they're going to have cage fights there. Crazy story. David Haye is retiring. Are you upset? I know you are.
I am.
No, you're not.
Probably not.
David.
No, I'm not. You know what? Actually, if you would ask me that question about 3 months ago, I would have said yes. To be honest. And the reason is, I mean, the guy attracted fans. He could be an exciting fighter. You know, he had knockout power. He was charismatic. He trash talked. So you basically look at it like this way.
he could have been like a, now, believe me, don't shoot me for the comparison, but you look at the similarities. He could have been like a 2011 version of Muhammad Ali. You know, fast hands. I mean, Ali didn't have that pure punching power that David Haye had, but Ali was a sharper puncher per se. You know, he was a better combination puncher, where Haye sometimes would rely on the one big bomb. But still had fast hands, had a brash personality. You know, he could talk. But then when it came time to deliver in the biggest event of his life, when he had a chance to back up all the trash talk that he did, he talked the talk. He did not walk the walk. In fact, he came out there and tried to tell you about a broken pinky toe and this and that. And a writer for Ring Magazine, who I happen to like, Jim Bagg, was making fun of him about it. He's like, how can you fight without the piggy that goes wee, wee, wee all the way home? He goes, you know, Klitschko had 10 operating toes, and Haye only had 9. The fact that he didn't, you know, beat him by much worse is a testament to Haye's courage. Of course, he's being sarcastic the whole time, you know, laughing at him. But, you know, the reason David Haye is retiring, I don't think it has nothing to do with his toe, and I don't think it has nothing to do with him not wanting to fight anymore. I think it has to do with the fact that if he comes back, he has to humble himself. You know, you go out there and you basically drop a turd in the biggest event of your life in front of a huge HBO audience. What are you going to go back out there and say? If you had a T-shirt of you holding the cap, I forget which brother was the decapitated one in the photo, if it was Vladimir or if it was Vitaly, I don't remember, but basically, I mean, he had a photo of a decapitated head of one of the brothers, and he was holding like a triumphant warrior, and how he was going to knock both brothers out, and he was going to do this, and he was going to do that. He basically turned out there and took a shit in the ring. He's come back, first of all, he knew there would be a lot of backlash against him for any more fights, and he'd have to go back way back to the beginning, build himself back up, regain the loyalty of his fans, regain interest back in himself. And I was like, you know what? I don't think he was willing to eat that humble pie. He was like, you know what? Let me just get out now.
Yeah,
let me do the Rocky Balboa and throw the towel in now.
They were saying the only other fight that would have even made sense would be to go against the other brother. And who wants to do
that?
Especially with Bill.
The other brother that's a little bit older, a little bit slower, a little bit more mobile, a little bit less mobile, I should say. Vitaly has more of a killer instinct. I don't know if David Haye, I mean, there would have been more opportunities because Vitaly is a little bit easier to hit. He's a little bit more wide open than his brother Vladimir is. Vladimir likes to play more defensive because of the, he's more cautious about his chin. So you're looking at the guy that Vitaly probably would have pressed the action and went more for the knockout.
Yeah, I don't like his chances against either one, and never did.
But I think the reason he's getting out now is he's getting out, you know, before he has to eat a big dose of humble pie.
Or cut weight and go back to,
go back to the fruit and shit. Yeah, that's like 20 pounds you got to cut. I don't think you want to do that either.
No.
What would be the interest being cruiserweight right now?
Yeah. Oh, well. We won't miss you, David A. We won't miss you.
Yeah.
But nice try. Come back again. Someday when you're out of money.
Yeah, exactly.
Who would he fight then? I don't know. Anyway, we got a couple other fights this weekend. My computer would start cooperating with me. We got PJ Flores coming up for a belt. Just trying to get it in front of me here. PJ Flores, cruiserweight. Speaking of cruiserweights, he's fighting a 10-rounder in Springfield, Missouri on Saturday with Paul Jeanette, who's 11-3, with one draw, 8 knockouts. And BJ is 25-1-1 with 16 knockouts. And this fight is for the vacant WBC Continental America's Cruiserweight title, as well as the vacant WBA Fedelatin Cruiserweight title, which are Tony's favorite titles.
That's pretty odd.
There's also another cruiserweight fight on there, an 8-rounder between Ryan Coyne, who's 17-0 with 6 knockouts, and James Crawford, who's 40-13 with 17 knockouts, 2 draws. My computer is in full frozen mode, so. All right. Let's see if this works. Anyway, I went down the page, and it's the Bernard Hopkins card. Mention we have a big fight for our recent former guest Chuck Cold Steel O'Neill from the New England area. A few weeks ago we had him on talking about the Ultimate Fighter show,
right. And
he's fighting the Irish Hand Grenade, another guy from New England, from the Maine area, Bangor's Marcus Davis. They're going to fight at W1 Reloaded. Card's going to be at the Bank United Center in the University of Miami campus in Coral Gables, Florida. And it's a welterweight 170-pound fight scheduled to be nationally televised beginning at 8 p.m. this Saturday. Davis is 38. His record is 20-8. And he's coming off a first-round victory over Travis Iron Chin Coyle. So, Chuck, going to need his cold steel in this one. He's 36, so he's actually only 2 years younger than Davis. He's 8-4, and he's a veteran of the Ultimate Fighter 13 show. And our show is also a veteran of. So we definitely wish Chuck the best in that fight. He's going to need to bring it to him. Davis is no joke. And even though the UFC got rid of him, he's won 3 in a row since then. So, pretty much told them to go to hell. I think I also read somewhere, too, I don't know whether it's this weekend, I know I posted a blog about it, it was like the biggest female fight in forever. Holly Holm is fighting somebody big. If I can find it here. Box Rec. Why are you so slow? Well, while I'm waiting for Box Rec to come out of its coma, we do have the MMA fights coming up this weekend. We haven't done those in a while. We got next Thursday the 13th. Did not know that. But I know it's not Friday the 13th, but I think Thursday is better. Thursday the 13th. Anyway, tomorrow night we got M1 Challenge 27, 14th. At Grand Canyon University Arena in Phoenix, Arizona. We have Score Fighting Series 2 Friday night from Hamilton, Ontario in Canada. Absolute Action MMA 19 from Florence, Kentucky on Friday. And we got a bunch of stuff on Saturday, starting with King of the Cage, Underground 71 from Cortez, Colorado. And Shark Fights 20 in Laughlin, Nevada, which is way out there in the desert. All right. We got Brace for War 12, Hobart, Tasmania. Oh, that's Australia. Brace for War 12 down in Australia. Bellator Fighting Championships 54 from Atlantic City, New Jersey. We got First Cage Attack in Tokyo on Saturday. We got a Fight Night 4 in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Rumble on the Ridge 20 in Snoqualmie, Washington. Chicago Cage Fighting Championship 4 in Villa Park, Illinois. Peak versus Soltero at the UFA 5 in the Central Wyoming Fairgrounds in Casper, Wyoming. And we have Capital Cage Wars 7 down in Springfield, Illinois. Let's see, what else do we got? Wild Card 2 from the Moncton, New Brunswick, Casino, New Brunswick. Vitetti Combat 10 in Rio de Janeiro. Fight Fest at Bike Fest in South Padre Island, Texas on Saturday, which sounds like a fun place to be. I know South Padre is a pretty huge spring break spot, so I'm sure fighting will go over well there. We got Jawbreaker Fights 13 from Jacksonville, North Carolina. All this is on Saturday. Total Mayhem Respect. Those don't seem to go together. The card is called Respect. The league is Total Mayhem. West Haven, Utah. Coliseum Combat 18 from Kokomo, Indiana. We got Fully Loaded in Jamestown, North Dakota. And Caged Fury 15 in Cleveland, Ohio. And finally on Saturday, we got Reloaded, W1 Reloaded from Coral Gables, Florida. And then on Sunday, we got the Brazilian Fight League 14 from Paraná, Brazil. And I don't know if I'm going to get Box Rec working here. Being a pain in the ass. Who do you like in the football games this weekend?
I'll look at the schedule probably like tomorrow, make my picks for the week. Come around, like, you know, if there's 13 games, I'll learn about 9 of them and miss the running by 2.
Well, how about this? So, do you think Indianapolis is going to get their first win this weekend against Cincinnati?
I don't know. Probably not.
No.
I'm gonna.
I'm gonna bet you. I'll bet you $5 they will. Philadelphia is playing Washington this week.
That's I guess I'll watch that one out of sheer curiosity.
Buffalo at the New York Giants. That's going to be a good game. Most of the games are at 1 o'clock this week for some reason. They only got 1, 2,
that's
3.
That's still an old man like me, you know, stay up late.
That's like super early for me out west here. It's unbelievable. Anyway, I guess we're going to have to cut out early because my mainframe is not cooperating with me. And we didn't book 2 guests tonight, so what can you do?
But you know what? Sometimes it's quality over quantity.
Exactly. So until next week, we'll have another fine guest, possibly from the boxing world. We'll try to maybe start a little bit of a trend in that area.
Works for me.
Since we've been overloading the schedule with MMA guys.
Yeah.
And there isn't actually a UFC event until the end of the month anyway. October 30th, I think, is the next one. So, au revoir for now, and we will speak again next week.
All right, sounds good. Well, man, hasta la vista, baby.
Good night, folks. Thanks for stopping by.
All right.